to the seventh case, Britton v. Astru. Mr. Schultz.
Again, may it please the Court, Your Honors, Barry Schultz on behalf of the plaintiff, Shirley Britton. In this case, the plaintiff's counsel raised numerous objections to the reliability of the vocational expert's testimony. He noted that there were inconsistencies between the VE's testimony, within the VE's testimony, that the vocational expert had testified that she had not even finished her own research to determine whether the statistics that she relied on were themselves reliable. And yet the ALJ, there were 40 pages approximately of cross-examination of this vocational expert, quite extensive. But when the ALJ issued her decision, she mentions the vocational expert's testimony that there are jobs that this claimant could perform, and then she adopts that testimony without any mention of the fact that there were significant objections raised by the plaintiff's counsel at the hearing. She doesn't do any analysis to determine whether or not the VE's testimony was actually reliable or not. And this court in the Donahue case specifically says that a vocational expert, if the foundation of the testimony is challenged, the ALJ has the responsibility to analyze whether or not that testimony actually is reliable. Here the ALJ unquestionably just adopts the testimony with no discussion of its reliability, which is particularly striking in this case given the amount of cross-examination of this vocational expert. Plaintiff's counsel on approximately 10 occasions during the hearing asked the ALJ to request or order the vocational expert to provide him with her underlying data and documentation. And although the ALJ didn't specifically respond point for point every time that was raised by counsel, I believe on 8 separate occasions the administrative law judge did specifically say that she was not going to require the vocational expert to turn over the documentation. One of, again, I think striking points in the record is when the vocational expert said that she relied on something called ONET and that she used it both in publication form and online. And the attorney asked if she would turn over that documentation, and she said no because it's available free to everybody online. When the counsel then asked the judge asked the VE for the web address and the pages on the website so he could find the information, the vocational expert said she might be able to get that for him, at which point the ALJ interjected and said, no, I'm not going to require that she provide you with that information. Counsel pointed out to the judge that there were thousands of pages on the ONET website. Apparently he was familiar with it, and he didn't know which pages the vocational expert had utilized, to which the ALJ responded, I don't know, and I'm not going to require her to turn that information over to you. Again, in this court, in the McKinney versus Barnhart case, the court said, and in Donahue, that if requested, underlying documentation and data for a vocational expert's testimony has to be available on demand, and it was not provided to claimant's counsel, and therefore that rule of law was violated in this case. There was no way for the attorney to properly cross-examine this vocational expert without seeing the underlying data that she relied on.
Did she have that data? I don't remember who it was. It had the data, the VE. Well, I don't remember if it was a male or a female, but did the VE have that data with him?
She did have some of the data with her, yes.
And there was, ALJ wouldn't let him look at it or something?
That's correct. That's correct. Now, the commissioner in her brief says that plaintiff's counsel never asked for that documentation, but I believe if your honors look at the citations in plaintiff's brief, you'll note that the counsel directly asked the ALJ to have the VE turn over that documentation and specifically said, I only want the documentation that she relied on, not the whole publications, although the first time he may have requested the publication be included, but then he quickly changed that and said, I just want the information that the VE relied on. And he started to question her about, well, what's on the page that's in front of you? Are there columns and is there information there? But at no time did the ALJ require that the VE show him that information. So as he said to the ALJ, he couldn't properly cross-examine or refute what the VE was saying without seeing her underlying data and documentation.
What specifically was he looking for? The actual, I don't know what it was, a list of jobs or was it the type of work it entails or what was missing that he couldn't...
Both of those things, Your Honor. There was the vocational expert was using some form that apparently had numbers on it that, of jobs that existed at the light, unskilled level. But he couldn't see that. The counsel wasn't given that. He couldn't see if she was accurately reporting what was on there. In addition, the vocational expert said that she relied on this O-Net for descriptions of jobs. He wasn't able to see that. But she also then, as the hearing went on, she kept adding things that she used. When she was first asked what she relied on, she mentioned this one occupational quarterly handbook. Later on, she said, I also used O-Net. Later on, she said, I also used Wisconsin Department of Labor workforce information. When the ALJ asked her if she used her experience to change the numbers or extrapolate the numbers from the data, she said yes. When the counsel asked her, at first she said she used a trial and error method, but then as the questioning went on, she then changed her mind and said no, she didn't change the numbers, she just relied on the raw data. So of course counsel couldn't ask any further questions about her methods because she said she relied on the raw data. Then the ALJ went back to her and she said, no, I relied on my experience. But she never then answered the counsel's question as to how she used her experience to change the numbers that were on the page. I mean, really, in this case, the attorney was stymied in every attempt he made to find out how the vocational expert came up with her testimony.
Now, the VE in this case, Mr. Schultz, actually had some of these materials at the hearing?
Yes.
So when the cross-examination was going on, the VE had the documentation, and it's some of that documentation that counsel wished to have.
That's correct. She had something called the Occupational Employment Quarterly, and she was reading from that document. She had that with her. She had some report that she had prepared, because when the counsel asked her about the Dictionary of Occupational Titles, and she said, well, she didn't have all that information with her, but she had prepared a report from which she was testifying about that. And the counsel asked to see that report, and she said she would not turn it over, and the ALJ said that she wouldn't order her to show that report to counsel.
You know, the thing curiosity I have is this seems to be a rather rare approach. I know you've been doing this a long time, and we've seen a lot of Social Security cases, and I know they rattle off these jobs available, and everybody sort of shrugs and says, yeah, well, either I don't want to do those or a lot of jobs, but you can't get them. But at least I know you have this McKinney case, but this is a fairly unusual challenge, isn't it?
It's, I would say more that it's fairly new or recent as opposed to unusual. At some point, some attorney, not me, decided that they needed to see where these vocational experts were actually coming up with their numbers and determined that in many instances there was really no solid scientific data behind the numbers that they were giving, that they didn't really have any reliable basis for saying that there were those numbers of jobs, and, or sometimes any numbers of jobs. So there are more challenges like this are coming up through the administrative level.
Well, so it's going to be, these have to be produced, or EPEs are going to have to be prepared to show them? Because I guess all you're going to see is a big list.
And
just say that she's not making it up, I guess. Yeah, here's the list.
Well, that's the thing, is that the attorneys need to be able to determine whether the VEs are actually just kind of making it up or just guessing versus there being actual data behind their testimony. Now, on this record, that's not a determination in front of the court because it never got to that point where the actual data was looked at and challenged because it was never. The ALJ didn't look at it and the attorney didn't look at it.
Following up on Judge Mannion, Ms. Schultz, in your experience, do VEs generally come with documentation to these hearings?
It's quite mixed. And some who've been doing it for a long time don't come in with hardly anything, a couple sheets of paper. Others will come in with the full reports. And again,
if I could draw on your experience, are requests for turnovers common? I mean, are requests for the documentation common?
Again, I would say it's mixed. It's not uncommon, and more attorneys are doing it. Once it kind of came out that there was some question with where the VEs were getting some of their numbers, more attorneys are doing it.
If I could follow you one, because I know your expertise in the area. What has been the practice of ALJs in responding to these requests?
Mixed.
If you can generalize.
Mixed. Again, some ALJs will order it. Other ALJs won't order it. I've had a recent case remanded from the district court where the ALJ didn't order it. It was ordered on remand. So. Thank
before
you, Your Honor.
Following up to that question,
yes,
in most of these cases, I think McKinney, the VA vocational expert, testified without any, no written report and no reference materials. Is that correct?
Well, no, I think she didn't have anything with her at the hearing.
With
her. That's correct.
So here you've got one step beyond. She had some things with her, the book, but not this website information. Is that
That's correct?
Correct.
Well, and also information from the Dictionary of Occupational Titles she didn't have with her. She had a report, but she didn't have it with her. Now,
isn't that something that that you could, that a claimant could have that same book?
Well, the problem is that there are thousands of pages in these books.
Well, but you, you know, you have the book and you walk up and show it to the witness and say, all right, here's show me where in this book it has the figures that you're saying, the jobs that are available, whatever.
Well, I suppose that's possible, except if the McKinney case is a good check on this case, because different vocational experts use different sources. There are many different sources out there that a vocational expert might use. The attorney won't necessarily know until he goes into the hearing, because there's no discovery in these cases, what sources the VE has relied on before he gets there.
And what's more important, the number, the identifying certain jobs that one could do, or the number of jobs that are available?
Well, the statute says...
I mean, somebody can't walk. They can sit down. So it's kind of common knowledge that there are jobs you can do by sitting down. You don't have to stand up.
Right.
But how many of those?
Well, that's what I mean. The scheme is that if a person can do the full range of sedentary work, if they're under 50 years old in particular, the medical vocational guidelines dictate a finding that there are jobs in significant numbers that they can do. But once you're off of the what's called the grid, the medical vocational guidelines, because there are additional non-exertional impairments that this claimant has, then the vocational expert has to come up with jobs that exist in significant numbers. So at that point, the numbers of jobs are critical because they have to be significant numbers in order to meet the commissioner's burden at step one.
She's under 50.
Yeah, she is under 50. But she has
close to 50, yeah.
But she has numerous non-exertional impairments that would take her and did take her off of the grid.
Does the record tell us? It says that she's obese, but does it tell us her height and weight?
Yeah, at varying times, she was between 260 and 280, and she was about 5'5". The record does show that.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Ms. Dumian?
Good morning. Ms. Britton's counsel essentially argues that Ms. Britton didn't have an opportunity to challenge the reliability of the vocational expert because he didn't have sufficient access to the information that the expert relied upon. But in fact, if you look at the record, the attorney did have considerable access to this information. First of all, as counsel pointed out today, there was quite extensive cross-examination in this case, and the ALJ was very welcoming and allowing a large amount of cross-examination in this case, and was not cutting it off at any point in time. So counsel had a broad opportunity to raise the kinds of questions that this court raised today to the vocational expert at that time. Also, as the court pointed out, the vocational expert did bring with her to the hearing the privately published resources that she had used in formulating her opinion.
Privately published, did you say?
They are privately published, yes. They include all information from government sources, but there's a private publication that puts them together in a way that makes them easier to read and kind of gathers them together in a way that makes it easier for vocational experts to identify jobs. And she explained that in some detail. She explained that she starts, for example, with the dot codes because that explains how you do the specific jobs. Then she goes to the specific occupational selector manual, which she brought to the hearing, and that translates all those dot codes into census codes. So then she can take those census codes because no government entity puts together numbers of jobs by dot codes. They do it by census codes. So then she takes those census codes and she's able to go then and get the numbers of jobs that match with those dot codes at various levels, like sedentary, light, skilled, and unskilled. So does that make sense to you? They're privately published, but they're all based on government data. In fact, Ms. Britton's counsel submitted after the hearing some documentation from that publisher that explains that all the documentation is taken from government sources.
And this is available, I guess, to anybody.
You know, it's not. You do have to publish it. The information in there would be available.
When you say privately published, does that mean it's privately published on by contract and it's only for the person that had it published, or is it open to the... Is it for sale, I guess?
It is for sale. It is for sale. But it's not something that is, like, on the Internet or for free. The information that it was based on is public information, but they just put it together in a way that makes more sense.
There's
easier.
A lot of stuff like that. So, but somebody went to the effort, put it together, and then sells it, I guess.
That's correct. That's correct. But she did have these with her at the hearing. She did explain in some detail. She provided the specific census codes. And what's more interesting is that the vocational expert actually did go through and try to trace backwards. She did take one of the jobs, take the census codes, and open the book and say, okay, I'm going to tell you what they are. And counsel for Ms. Britton stopped her and said, I don't want to know. I don't want you looking in the book. I want to know what you know off the top of your head, which doesn't seem very reasonable. As you pointed out, this is a huge number of jobs. This is very detailed information. We don't expect our experts to know this off the top of their heads. If Ms. Britton had not stopped the vocational expert and the vocational expert had given the DOT numbers, as she was planning to do, he would have been able to go on to the ONET. I tested this myself. You type in O-N-E-T, comes right up, and if you have the DOT number, you can get all that information. You can verify that this job has all the limitations that were consistent with what the ALJ found. So Ms. Britton's not really in a great position to be challenging at this point the unavailability of the ONET. What she did ask the vocational expert for at the hearing was the precise internet sites for each page she looked at, which I think we can agree would be a little bit more than a vocational expert could be expected to memorize and know off the top of her head. However, if he'd allowed the expert to testify about the DOT numbers, as I said, he could have had that information. Also, counsel, I read it again and again. I can't see in there anywhere where he specifically asked to see those books. He insisted again and again that instead the government should either buy him a copy, make it part of the record, or pay someone to stand at a copier for long periods of time and identify each particular page that the vocational expert looked at and photocopy each of those pages.
Well, I'm going to ask the same question. What have you run into your office as far as this line of questioning and this attempt to produce stuff? Is this becoming more typical, or is this your first case with this, or what?
I haven't seen one this specific, and usually the council allows the vocational expert to give the DOT numbers so that we can go back and check the DOT numbers, and it's not a big deal. So this is an unusual case to me in that council was insisting on the manner in which the evidence has to be produced. And I don't think anything about McKinney or Donahue says that claimant's counsel gets to dictate the manner in which this information is provided. And as of October 2007, the Social Security Administration had 700,000 cases pending hearing, just waiting for a hearing. The agency needs some degree of flexibility to decide how to hold these hearings, decide how much is enough. The ALJ reasonably decided in this case that this was enough, that she was giving enough specific information about the foundation for her testimony. She had the documents right there with her if he wanted to look through them. Again, he didn't want to look through them. He wanted the government to pay. And we simply can't have those kinds of resources expended in every single case.
Well, what would be the goal in this, as best you can determine? Is it just to find out what there really aren't those jobs or something like that? Because we've heard these cases for a long time, and it's perfunctory. They just go through and list them, and you say, yeah, I'm sure they're out there. I'm not sure they're even open, but nevertheless, that seems to be the only standard. Now it looks like there's a challenge to whether or not they even exist or something like that. Do you think that's just a way to throw them off track, or is this some legitimate inquiry that has been overlooked.
I think what is legitimate, and I have seen other cases, is asking the vocational expert for specific dot codes, and then you can look those dot codes up on in the Dictionary of Occupational Titles, in the ONET, and I believe the DICOT, there's another publication that also gets very particular into the type of requirements for the jobs in terms of standing, sitting, use of your hands, crouching, all those minute details. And you can go back and say, look, I don't think my claimant can perform those jobs. And that's legitimate. And that's a legitimate line of questioning. As far as the numbers of jobs, if he wanted to verify in those resources, I think that's very legitimate. He didn't ask to do that. He didn't want to do that. She said that wouldn't be a problem because that would only be 6 or 7 pages of the one book that had the numbers of jobs. These are government resources that provide this information, and the Social Security Administration has taken administrative notice of the reliability of the government statistics. No one else collects this information. And no, the vocational expert doesn't know the nitty-gritty of exactly how they do that. She said she had some idea how she thought they conducted their surveys, but she didn't know exactly how they conducted their surveys. That doesn't make her testimony unreliable. She's not required to know exactly how the government conducts its surveys and collects every statistic. This is the most reliable statistic we have. The agency has taken administrative notice that it's reasonable to rely on those statistics. And contrary to counsel's assertions, the vocational expert did clarify the confusion at the hearing about how she considered her own knowledge and experience. As counsel explained, she did verify that she did not consider her own experience in changing the numbers at all. She took the numbers straight off the government statistics. However, she did use her own experience to determine whether Ms. Britton could do the jobs represented in those figures. And that required knowledge of the actual environment of the jobs, about what the work settings are, what the employers really require. And that's at pages 806 and 804 of the hearing. And the ALJ was satisfied that she had explained away this confusion at the hearing. By the time the ALJ got to her decision, there was nothing left to resolve. And she said again and again, look, I'm finding this vocational expert reliable. If you want to give me something after the hearing, I'll consider that. And I won't make my decision right now. But everything I'm hearing now makes her reliable. And counsel, I think in his reply brief, pointed to page 785 of the transcript. And if you look at that page, again, the ALJ is saying again, look, I'm finding it reliable. It's consistent with the prior VE. She's giving you a lot of numbers. It looks very reliable. However, if you want to submit something after the hearing, I'll consider that. He didn't do that. There was nothing left to resolve at the time of the decision. There was nothing that suggested this vocational expert was not reliable. Did I answer the questions?
No, I won't ask you that. I won't repeat it.
Pardon?
I won't repeat the question, that's for sure. Thank you.
That's very good.
That's very good.
Okay. If there are no more questions then?
Apparently not.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Shields, your time had expired, but you were questioned extensively, and you may have another minute.
The main problem plaintiff has with the commissioner's argument is that these are not the government statistics don't show whether work is unskilled. The government statistics don't show whether work is done at the sedentary level, the light level, the heavy level, and the census doesn't ask any of those questions. This private company uses a methodology to extrapolate that information. The question that counsel for plaintiff was trying to get at was, how do they do that, and is that reliable? And on this record, nobody can tell whether or not it's reliable or not. That's the problem. Yes, this private company, U.S. Publishing, uses government statistics. But they then do their own extrapolation, mix things up, and come out with numbers that the government has nothing to do with. And Social Security doesn't take administrative notice of this Occupational Employment Quarterly, which is the document that has these numbers on it. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Thank you, Mr. Dubon. The case is taken under advisement. And